I'm here today with Heidi Grant Halvorsen. She's a social psychologist specializing in the study of motivation and goal achievement. She's the Associate Director of the Motivation Science Center at Columbia University, and she's the author of some of my favorite books on success, including Succeed, How We Can Reach Our Goals, and 9 Things Successful People Do Differently. She also has a new one out called Focus, which is about the 2 primary ways people motivate themselves. Thanks for being here today, Heidi.
Thank you so much, Jill.
I am delighted to have you here talking with my sales readers, listeners, about goals. And I want to talk about some very specific things that you actually say in your book, because I think they're so relevant to those of us in this profession. So I like to start out by saying that one of the things that you say is that in order to be successful, you can't just do your best, that you need to do something more tangible. Can you give us an idea, an overview of what makes a good goal?
Well, I think it's easier to start in some ways with what makes a bad one. And I think, you know, there's a very natural tendency, this very pervasive human tendency to think about our goals in very abstract terms. So we tend to say things to ourselves like, I want to be more successful, or I want to be a better communicator. I want to be a better salesperson. I want to lose some weight. and that's
I've had that goal before.
Everybody has. Two-thirds of us have that goal. And, you know, the thing is that when we think about our goals in that way, even though in some sense it's very natural to do so, it turns out that we now understand a lot more about how our brains are wired with respect to how we pursue goals. And as it happens, without a very specific goal in mind, a lot of the systems in the brain that are designed to help us reach our goals, the systems that control what we pay attention to, our working memory, what we're thinking about at any given point in time, how much effort we put in to something, how much willpower we use and self-control, how much planning we engage in, all of those things are controlled, in a sense, by the presence of a specific goal. And if you have a very vague goal, like I want to do better, I want to, get better at this or be more successful at that, your brain doesn't really know what to do with that. So one of the very first things I recommend that people do when they're setting goals is really get specific. And so, of course, the question then is, well, how specific do you need to be? I think the level of specificity you're really shooting for when it comes to your goals, your personal and professional goals, is being able to picture the moment that you will succeed. So in other words, when you say something like, I want to be more successful, well, how will you know when you've done that? What does more successful look like, right? It's very vague. You don't really know. But if instead you say, I want a promotion to a certain level, or I want to reach a sales target of a certain level, or I want to lose a certain amount of weight, you'll know the moment you reach that goal. You can imagine what that moment looks like, and you'll know when you reach it. That's the level of specificity you really want to be looking for. So I think it doesn't take a lot of time for people to do this, to just sort of reflect on the things they're trying to do in their professional life, in their personal life, and say, okay, do I really have a handle on exactly what success looks like? And when you can say that you do, you've gotten specific enough.
I think what's fascinating about what you just said is that without having this kind of specific goal, your brain doesn't do what it can do to help
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. You know, we tend to think of reaching goals and pursuing goals as very conscious and deliberate things, mm-hmm. and they can be. They can be, but actually the vast majority of the time, our brains work on a kind of autopilot. We are in any situation, you're usually trying to achieve multiple goals at the same time, and you're not consciously thinking about how every single thing you do is getting you closer to a particular goal you have. But that's in fact what's happening. So a lot of it is happening non-consciously. We have a lot of systems in the brain that run largely below our awareness, and they are designed to help us reach our goals, to help us select actions and persist in the face of challenges, and to give us the resources we need in order to do what we need to do. But they run it's sort of like a computer. It needs the right input, and that input is very specific goals.
Cool. One of the things in sales, people do have specific goals, and most of the people
right.
who are listening in today are in the sales field, and at the beginning of every year, you know, they are assigned their quota, and their quota might be, you know, $500,000 or $5 million or whatever it is. for most salespeople, it's usually a challenging goal, and they
right.
kind of gulp when they hear it. And I know you say that challenging goals are good, but mm-hmm. is this enough to be able to say, my goal is 500,000? It's January, my goal is 500,000. January, it's my goal, it's 5 million. Is that enough today?
I think that there's some additional, you know, that's a place to start. Mm-hmm. And then what the research shows us is that there's that really then what becomes motivating and what makes you effective is how you think about that goal of 500,000 or 5 mm-hmm. million or whatever it is. And there's really two ways, and they're both really useful that I think it really behooves us to take some time to think about. The first is the why question. The why am I pursuing this goal, right? Because it's really the why of that 500,000 quota that is what's motivating, right? And so to spend some time thinking about why is this important? How does reaching this target influence my other important goals? Why is this important to me? Why is this important to my organization? You know, and in a way, what do I get from that? How will that benefit me? So those are all the why questions. And it's really the why of a goal that makes us feel motivated. And when you feel not particularly motivated, when you feel like you need a little bit of a, you know, a juicing up of the system, it's thinking about that why, taking a moment to think about the why that really kind of gets your juices flowing.
You know,
but then on the other hand, you need to also think about the what,
yeah.
right? What is it exactly you need to do? And again, this is something people tend to not do very naturally. We don't naturally, all of us, think about our goals and break them down into concrete actions, the specific things we're going to need to do in order to get the job done. And thinking in terms of what or how, right? How am I going to reach that target? That allows us to do something very different, which is to be prepared for what lies ahead and to kind of handle challenges a bit more effectively because we've thought it through. So both of those levels of thinking are very important, and often people will do one and not the other. And I think they're both necessary in order to kind of get ready and get motivated and get prepared to reach that goal.
I think the hardest thing in sales is to stay motivated because there is so much rejection and things take mm-hmm. so long in
right.
order to achieve the thing. I mean, a sales cycle may be 3 months long, it may be 18 months long, depending on what you're selling. So staying motivated is crucial, which
right.
gets to the why part, right? I mean,
yes,
that really
exactly.
is the essence of why you have to understand the why.
Yeah, and sometimes it really is when we are bogged down with challenges, we forget the why, because we're so busy concentrating on the what. And when you feel that your motivation is sort of ebbing a bit too much and you really just don't feel enthusiasm, it's taking a moment. And again, this idea, and I'll probably say this a million times in this 10 and a half an hour, that taking a moment to think about your goals, taking a moment to think why, taking a moment to think about how, whether or not you're being specific, is so incredibly powerful. And yet it's something we generally don't do. We don't carve out those moments to think about what we're doing and to do that strategically. And it's really an incredibly productive tool.
You know, I'm going to just throw in some ideas, some thoughts. I've mm-hmm. kind of asked people that question because I had my own why when I started in sales. And I, you know, nobody grows up, or not a lot of people grew up in my time, and wanting to be in sales. It was looked down upon. And I think in many, you know, realms today, people think of salespeople as sleazy, but I had a real why in terms of why I went into sales, because I had a business idea and I brought it to the Service Corps of Retired Executives. They looked at my business plan. They said, "This is great, Jill, but mm-hmm. Who's going to sell this?" And I looked at them in kind of like in shock, thinking, you know, and literally said, "I thought you said this was a good idea." And they said, "Yes, but somebody has to sell it." And so I literally went into sales with one and only one goal. To figure it out so I could go back to my business idea. I mean, that was my why. That's what got
right.
me up. And you know, I've told people before that I actually have fainted in sales calls from sheer terror.
Wow.
And I had to literally pick myself up off the ground and go forward. But the why was I wanted to get my own business.
That is such a great example of exactly what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah.
That idea that it is that why that keeps us going, and that can very easily get lost.
Yeah.
Because especially when things are difficult, it's very natural to start concentrating on the nitty gritty, you know,
mm-hmm.
instead of the big picture. But it is the big picture that keeps you going. Again, the nitty gritty is important too. I mean, because if you're all big picture and no nitty gritty, then you're not going to really get anything done. But, you know, we do have to kind of go back and forth. And being deliberate about that, I think, is really powerful. And that's a great example. Mm-hmm.
You know, I've also seen salespeople who have a why goal too, and it's not just a personal why goal, although it is in a sense. It's because that they believe that what they sell has value. I mean, they truly believe that what they do matters and will help their customers. And so they stay motivated even when the same customer doesn't get back to them and doesn't do anything and when they're prospecting, because they know the why is it matters. And I don't think people in sales sometimes think about that. They just think they're selling stuff.
Oh no, but that's a very good point. You know, what you do really does matter, and there is value in the things you do. And taking time to think about what that value is very powerful.
Yeah, I'm going to share another story. When I was calling on Medtronic years ago, when I was selling my sales training services, I actually was meeting with the vice president of sales for the neurological division, and mm-hmm. he had a picture of somebody behind him, and it was a tall cutout picture. And he said, "That's my customer, Jill. I just look at that person all the time and I think about this person and the difference I'm making to his or her life."
That's wonderful.
Oh, this guy is motivated at a deeper level than anybody else because he's literally got that cutout in his office looking at that person the whole time.
To what we know to be, you know, that people pursue all different kinds of goals, and it's very common to find that people are pursuing, you know, everybody wants to make money, everybody wants to move up in terms of having more power, everybody wants people to think that they are smart and talented, and all of those things are very, very natural. But it turns out that the goals that really sustain us and really make us what I like to call happy with a capital H, like the kind of happiness that is lasting, that mm-hmm. isn't just a momentary, you know, a quick moment and then you have to get a new fix, mm-hmm. are the goals that are that feed into what we call these three basic human needs. One of them is the need for relatedness, right? So to feel that you have relationships and meaningful relationships with people in your work life, your family, your community, that you're connecting with other people, and that individual you were talking about has this very real sense that what he's doing is helping his community, is helping real people in his community to thrive. And so that feeds a much bigger need than just, you know, making a lot of money or getting lots of power. So too does do goals where it's really about our developing ourselves, learning and growing and in our skills. That's also fundamental. And then the last one is autonomy, feeling, which is also very much related to what we're talking about, feeling like the things you do reflect something about you, your values, who you are, and that you're making choices that reflect those values and mm-hmm. who you are. And so again, there's somebody that's a great example of that person who's connecting what they're doing in sales with how it helps other people, with how it is a reflection of his values, and that's going to be a why that's going to be a very powerful why that keeps you going when things are very mm-hmm. very challenging.
I think, I don't know, do those kind of goals evolve more over time? Because I think when you're new into a profession like sales, and especially when there's the leaderboard and everybody sees how you're doing it, it can mm-hmm. be extraordinarily intimidating. And I think when you're new, your goal might just be to make it.
Survive.
Yeah. And if you can survive, and if you can achieve that quota, I mean, just achieving it is huge, not overachieving it. And survival is a goal. Do goals evolve over time?
They do. I mean, they do. And some of it in the beginning, I think, especially when you are afraid, mm-hmm. When you're facing something that's very new, or when the goals are very challenging and you're kind of new in the water and the learning curve is very steep, it's very, very natural for people to be mostly focused on just surviving, hitting the target, and that's all that matters. You know, the problem with that though is that in a way that's the kind of thinking that really doesn't allow people to reach their full potential. And you find that with experience, often people start to realize that that way of thinking about our goals, in the book I call it the be good mindset, right? That all you're trying to do all the time is be good, mm-hmm. to prove to other people and to yourself that you have what it takes. And you see your work as, in a way, a test of that goodness. Am I smart? Am I talented? Am I a good salesperson? You know, do I have what it takes?
Right.
I think that as we grow experience, some of us start to feel like that's just not a good way to be. And the research suggests that that's really very true. The vastly better way to think about the goals we pursue is that it's about getting better rather than being good. And so that it is about growing in your skills, developing yourself, figuring out, you know, what it is that you want to do and how you can develop and grow over time. Mm-hmm. Rather than constantly thinking, you know, am I smart enough? Am I creative enough? Am I good enough at sales? The focus becomes, how can I get smarter? How can I get more creative? How can I get better at sales? And again, you know, I have to say that in sales, this sort of get better mindset, because you do have these quotas, you do have these rankings, you're constantly being evaluated in these very concrete terms. And when I work with people in sales, one of the things I try to emphasize is that, yes, while that is true, and that's the kind of process that would make a lot of people focus on just hitting the quota and proving myself, you can always take a little bit of a longer view yourself personally and say, well, yes, I have to hit this quota, but overall, how I think about what I'm doing is I think about it as a process, as a journey of me trying to develop my skills rather than constantly prove that I have them. And it's really interesting, because in sales, you might think this is an area that this kind of thinking doesn't work. There's lots of research showing in general that when people are focused on getting better rather than being good, they outperform their peers. They enjoy what they do more. They find it more interesting. They are more creative. They think more deeply. They plan more effectively. They're able to be persistent in the face of challenges, and all again pursuing the same goals, but just with a different mindset, by thinking about what they're doing in terms of getting better over time rather than being perfect right now. And you might think that sales would be one area where this would, you know, be less true, because sales is so focused on very specific quotas and targets and rankings. And you might think, well, how can I have a get better mindset when I know that I have to hit X amount of sales, you know, in a quarter or over the course of a year? And what we know is that it is actually possible. Again, taking the long view, yes, I have to hit this quota, but my long view is what I'm trying to do is become a better salesperson. We know there's great work showing with sales teams. There's one really cool study, actually, that comes to mind, where they had sales teams who were selling medical equipment. And they followed a group of individuals selling medical equipment over the course of a year. And in the beginning of that year, they measured their mindsets, right? Do you tend to think about, when it comes to sales, do you agree with statements like, I'm trying to prove that I'm a good salesperson? Sometimes I feel like I'm being judged about whether or not I have what it takes. Or do you more agree with things like, it's very important to me to be developing and growing in my sales skills? So people who said the latter, that they were really focused on developing and growing, they vastly outperformed the people who were just focused on being good in sales over the course of the year. And the reason they did, it boiled down to really three things. They put in more effort, they planned more effectively, and they actually set higher goals for themselves. So even though they had a particular quota, they were more willing to challenge themselves, because the idea of failing is less frightening when you're focused on getting better, right? Because if you feel a certain comfort with challenge when your focus is, I'm trying to get better over time, rather than I have to be good right now, then when I'm trying to just prove that I am good, challenges are very terrifying. They can undermine you. They can make you feel very vulnerable. But when your focus is on getting better, challenges actually help you to achieve that goal. They teach you things. So it's a very powerful, like, it'll sound like a subtle shift in thinking, but it turns out to be a very powerful shift and allows people to sort of have their cake and eat it too. They end up being more productive and actually being able to enjoy the work that they do and find value in it much more effectively.
And they're not stressed out as much either.
Oh, I mean, much less stress. Yeah. Much less stress. Yeah. We know it's related to lower levels of anxiety, lower levels of depression. It's a real, it is probably the single most powerful strategy we've found for shifting the way in which people work.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to say this because for years I have said to people, it's not about if you're cut out for sales or not. Because a lot of people say, well, geez, you know, when I move into the field, maybe I'm just not, you know, cut out for this thing.
Yeah.
And I always say to them, no, you just haven't learned how yet. You have to keep saying to yourself, you know, I'm learning and I don't know how yet. So I need to figure it out. You know,
that's my favorite. You have just said my favorite addition to a sentence. It's yet, you know, and that is, and I run into this all the time. People saying, I'm not a math person. I'm not a technology person. Mm-hmm. I'm not cut out for sales.
Yeah.
And particularly in the West and nowhere more so than in the United States, we buy into those notions that there are math people and not math people and sales people and not sales people. And it's just simply not true. It's really just a way we've come to think about the nature of ability, that some people have it and some people don't. And the research tells us, the data is very clear on this point, that is just not true. There's no gene for sales, and there are no math genes. That, you know, the thing about math, technology, and sales is that they're complicated. They acquire, you to be really good at any of these things really requires you to have a lot of knowledge. And to learn to use that knowledge in complex ways. And so the people who are good at it are the people who stick around, the people who keep trying and don't give up on themselves too soon.
That is so funny that you say that, because I was giving a speech a few years ago, and the day before the speech, the CEO of the company actually said to me, Jill, rather than giving your usual speech that you talk about, would you spend a few minutes? I've got a young sales audience. You know, there are people who have been in sales for 2 to 3 years. Some are even newer. And would you just talk about your first couple of years in sales? And what I reflected on as I was thinking about it was how much fear and failure I had initially in my job. And I was scared that I wasn't going to be able to do it. I mean, it's like if I accomplished one goal, I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to accomplish the next one. Like I could meet my monthly quota in July, but would I meet it in August? You know, it's like, every month was like that. And what I came to realize as I was stepping back and looking at all this is that my ability to keep going kept me in the game long enough to get better and to succeed. And that's just what you're saying.
Absolutely. And it is that way across the board and what's funny is, you know, I remember back, I was one of those really good students in school, like the kind that would drive everybody else crazy. Mm-hmm. And the reason, and until I went to graduate school and started studying achievement and motivation for a living, my intuitions were just as bad as everyone else's. I thought that I was really good at school because I was smart. So I was that kid that would do all of the things that they had to do. I would start my homework as soon as I got home. I would, you know, if a book report took 3 weeks to do, I would start it right away. I made studying my absolute number one priority. And when I didn't understand something, you know, I would go and seek help. I would ask the teacher. I would ask for more help. I persisted. And I realized, and it's really funny because people will say, oh, you're such a gifted salesperson. And they don't realize that what it took to get you there was taking all the right actions when things were difficult.
Right.
And for me, I realized, it wasn't because I was smart. It wasn't because I had some, you know, I got the school genes. There are no school genes. Mm-hmm. There are actions that will get you there. And there are actions that will stand in your way. And persistence is always a big part of the answer, that people who hang in there are the ones who are successful. If you look at the story of just about anybody who became very successful in their field, it is always a story of challenge, challenge, challenge. Things didn't go so well, but I hung in there and then, you know, and that's always the answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's keep talking about that because, you know, a lot of people fail once, fail twice, and they think it's over, you know, and one of the things that you talk about is failure. And you say in one of your books, most of us blame our failures on the wrong things. And I think that's a fascinating statement. What can you expand on that?
Sure. So I mean, as I said, the number one thing people blame their failures on in this culture, at least in the West, is a lack of ability. That we really have this, you know, and it just, again, has a lot to do with the culture in which we're growing up in. And it's one where, you know, we're fascinated by prodigies and we're fascinated by the gifted. And, you know, if I ask you to describe what Steve Jobs in a word, you know, 99% of people will say genius or something like that. Right. And it's just how we explain success. And so therefore, it is how we explain failure. And so the number one thing that people do, I think that is one of the worst things they do for themselves in terms of their own success is say, when something is difficult, doesn't come to them easily, they say, well, I guess I don't have what it takes. They blame it on a lack of ability that they believe is, in some sense, innate. And so you can't get more of it. And this is just wrong. We also sometimes blame it on our failures on willpower. And that can be true, but it's actually much less true than you think it is. It turns out that the pitfalls, the real pitfalls of goal pursuit, of trying to reach any goal, are not necessarily the obvious ones. They tend to be things like not really being specific about what you need to do to reach your goal, right? So my favorite example, just because everybody relates to it, if you're trying to lose weight, people will make a plan that and say, well, I'll just eat less. You know, and I'll exercise more.
That sounds good.
But I mean, what's less? You know, what and of what? And how much less? And what will you eat instead? And what kind of exercise? And when? And where? And how much? And because we don't tend to think about the actions we need to take at that level, then we don't end up taking them. So a big part of why we actually fail to reach our goals is just not thinking about the actions we need to take, and then we miss opportunities to take them. You know, everybody has said, oh, I meant to work out today, but I didn't have time. Or I meant to return that phone call, but I didn't have time. Well, and it feels true when you say that. I mean, I've said it. It feels true. But what's actually more accurate most of the time is you had time, but you just chose to do something else with it. And you weren't necessarily consciously aware you were making that choice. But because we don't really think about our goals at this very specific level, we're constantly missing opportunities to act on our goals. We're not making the best use of our time. We're getting distracted and we're juggling too many goals at once. We're not working on the ones we should be working on because in the ideal moment. This way, our failures are really mostly about those two things and giving up too soon. That we close doors, you know, on ourselves far too readily, and that we should really be hanging in there and giving ourselves a chance. You know, we're impatient. We need to give ourselves a chance to learn something and a chance to become good at it. And again, there's this sense that if something doesn't come to you easily, then it's not for you. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Sometimes the people who are, I have a very good friend who is a brilliant mathematician, a PhD mathematician, and she failed calculus the first time she took it. And she loves to tell everyone that story too, because, you know, many of her students she teaches are terrified of math.
Yeah.
And she says, well, if I failed it and I could become a PhD in math, then I'm pretty sure you can manage it too. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. It's just simply not true that people who are very good at things and very good at sales got there by being naturally gifted. In general, it's true that they've had a lot of experience, a lot of ups and downs, and they've learned from them.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I have one last question I'd like to ask, that kind of continuing this theme that we're on. In your book, Succeed, you talk about the power and the peril of positive thinking.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you say, so if it's a good thing to believe you'll succeed, then surely it must be good to imagine yourself succeeding easily and avoiding temptations and avoiding obstacles with the slightest of effort.
Right.
But then right after that, you say, no, that's not true.
Right. And again, I think one of the hardest things about motivation and success is that our intuitions about them can be pretty terrible. And so say, so when an idea is out there, like the law of attraction, right? If you believe positive things, then the universe will manifest them, or, you know, the secret. There's a lot of people who kind of talk about these ideas that, you know, cross the word impossible out of your vocabulary, think only positive thoughts, imagine yourself succeeding easily, and then that's what's going to happen. There's a kind of intuitive appeal to that kind of thinking. It seems like maybe it should work.
It does.
And you know what? I wish it did.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I think that would be great. But unfortunately, it doesn't. And not only does it not work, but it's actually actively bad. The research that we now have a very clear picture about this. And it doesn't work for two reasons. One is, when difficult things happen, when challenges happen, when you have setbacks, when you get negative feedback, if you have been just merrily positively thinking all along, then you are completely unprepared when challenges come up. You have done zero thinking about what, you know, there's no plan B. You know, it's that best case scenario planning. You've given no thought to how you will handle it, and people tend to just completely fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lack of realism about what's going to happen to you when you're pursuing a goal is devastating in terms of making you vulnerable for just giving up on yourself. The other thing, interestingly, we now have we've done studies where you put people into, cook them up to all kinds of physiological measuring things like heart rate and blood pressure and how much cortisol is in their blood. And we look at what happens when people just think positive thoughts versus think realistically positive thoughts, what I like to call realistic optimism. So that's believing you can succeed, but believing it will be tough, believing it will face challenges and it will not be an easy road. When people think only positively, right, and I think everything's going to be easy, we actually find that their body goes into a state that's a lot like daydreaming. It's their blood pressure goes down in a bad way. Their heart rate goes down. Their body goes into essentially a waking sleep state. So they feel less of a sense that they need to get up and do something. And so they don't. They don't get up and do anything. Whereas the people who are thinking realistically optimistically, so they think, yes, I can do it, but it's going to be hard. And so let me think about all the ways in which it's going to be hard. They actually, their blood pressure goes up, again, in a good way, not too far up, but their heart rate goes up. The body starts preparing itself to take action. And they're much more likely to actually take action and be successful. There was a great study that showed, for example, women who were you know, morbidly obese and they needed to lose weight for health reasons, enrolled in a program. And the researcher who was looking at this in the study asked them to say, you know, how do you think it's going to work? Do you think you're going to succeed? And do you think it's going to be easy or hard? So not surprisingly, the people who thought they would succeed in losing weight lost 24 pounds more than the people that didn't. Mm-hmm. But then she looked within the people who succeeded. And she said, okay, did you think it was going to be easy or did you think it was going to be difficult? The people who thought it was going to be difficult lost on average 25 pounds more than the people who thought it was going to be easy.
Whoa.
So again, there's this sense that, you know, people keep beating into our heads this very probably well-intentioned but wrong notion that having negative thoughts is a bad thing. And it's just absolutely silly and wrong that you need to be a realist about the challenges that face you. And it is not negative to say, this is going to be hard. I may need to have a plan B. I may need to get some help from an expert. It's going to be tough going, and I'm going to have to persist, but I believe I can succeed. That's really the key. That's the kind of positive thinking that really is important, believing in yourself that over the long haul you can do it. But believing it's going to be easy just sets you up for disappointment and ultimately keeps you from really realizing your full potential.
I can see that it derails you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you can easily get derailed the minute you run into something hard. It's like, wait a minute, this was supposed to be easy. I've been picturing it and, you know, I envisioning success at the end of this call, and man, I just got lambasted, and it would throw you off your game. and make you worse. Yeah.
And the great thing is, if you believe that it's going to be challenging, then you're going to be prepared. And if it isn't challenging, well, then you'll just be pleasantly surprised.
I know. Isn't that wonderful?
Listen, no harm done.
Yeah, Heidi, thanks so much for your interview today. It's been filled with important information that everybody who is selling needs to hear, because it's a challenging profession. It's not easy to do. We're assigned goals often that we have to make our own and figure out how to succeed, sometimes when we don't know if it's even possible. So you have really helped us understand what it takes to get there today, and I truly appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Jill. This is great.
My pleasure.